Final hour, Overdrive continues, brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. Steve Phillips later in the hour on Jays Brewers tonight. Alek Manoah on the mound. What do we expect out of Alek Manoah on the mound? It's reached that point in his career. It's still an early career. It's still been a very positive career. But it's his this part of the season where you're like, what am I getting here? You know, like, what am I watching tonight? What am I going to see? You almost feel for the guy, you know, if the struggles continue, every bad start, you know, it just gets louder and louder. What are they going to do with this guy?
Dude, it's like following a car on a windy road that goes up on two wheels and then it goes around the corner and you don't see the car. You're just going around the windy road saying, what happened to that thing?
Yeah.
That's kind of the approach it is where you're like, okay, we're coming around the bend here. What's this guy got tonight? Because it's just going to be the same thing. That's what's in your head.
That's what it is. It's you're closing your eyes and you're like, come on, man.
Like throw just
some
pull
strikes.
A one together because you're not even close.
Yeah, and you know you're capable of doing it. Like we've seen it many times in his young career.
Dude, that guy used to wheel into Yankee Stadium and just be a boss.
Yes, dominate, own them, picking fights with Gerrit Cole.
Yes.
You know. But second time around, like it's almost like the pre-scout or the book's out on him. Like there's something.
Yeah, but Noodles, he hasn't had one of those performances where it's like, well, Alek Manoah was dynamite. They caught a couple pitches where they sent over the wall. Like this is just bad from start to finish. You know what I mean?
It's not unlucky.
Didn't he have one good performance at Yankee Stadium this year?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, he's had a few of them. Like he has. You know, what is this? His 12th or 13th start tonight? Like he's had examples of good outings,
right?
But more often than not, it's been poor. And what you see is it's really just a carbon copy. Too many pitches, you know, too many walks, and too many missed opportunities to get out of jams. And then it just builds up. And you're like, this guy's toast, man. He's not, like, he's already. The other day he threw, what did he throw, 40 pitches or something in an inning? You can't not do that and expect to go deep in a game. It's just not possible in the modern game. They're not going to allow you to do it.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at tonight. And Steve Phillips will join us. But the Jays are coming off a win last night. You know, they've won three of their last four. The bats were alive last night. Vladdy with a few hits, and you know we'll see what Steve can tell us about what he makes of the Jays and Manoah going tonight. Pierre LeBrun will join us, our TSN hockey insider. The news of the day today is Brad Treliving being announced as the GM of the Leafs and only the 18th GM in team history, which I don't know if that means anything, but for a team that's been around for a long time, you know, Dubas had a good run. Lou had a good run. You know, there's been guys who have had ample opportunity. Treliving will get a good run, and we'll see what he's going to do with the job. I think it's a good hiring. I think it's about consistency. It's about bringing him in and just allowing, you know, he's going to have to do some work here for sure. But this is what Shanahan said he was going to do, right? He wanted a guy with experience, and that's what Treliving brings. He's done it. He's done it for a long time.
I wonder if they're going to, you know, it'll trickle out the term of the deal. Like, was he given a five-year? Was he given what was offered to Kyle? You know, that type of thing. Like, is it because he's a veteran GM, so you're going to make money. It's not about the amount he's making, but maybe the term. Hey, you've got 5 years. Brendan Shanahan has, what, 2 years left on his deal?
I believe so, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, for Brad Treliving to take over, it's probably a 4 or 5 year deal you'd have to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think you're signing short term to you know, come in and take over in a really high pressure time where this is the window of their top players. Like, this is, you know, Matthews
no
and
kidding,
Marner.
Jamie.
And, like,
things
this is the window.
Fast. Before we know it, if this keeps up, we'll be saying, these guys are getting old.
Well, Tavares is 33, correct, in September? Like, that's, you know, that's the, you know, he's got 2 years left on his deal, but that this is the window for their core, and he's got to make some decisions on how his team's going to look moving forward.
Absolutely. Here's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN hockey insider. Pierre, it feels like Treliving was kind of at the forefront throughout the whole process, so by no means is this surprising. It doesn't really feel like even breaking news. It's just confirming the news we all were anticipating. But do you have any understanding of how deep it went for Shanahan in terms of who else he might have been talking to? Did he ever put any thought into a, you know, out of left field, crazy, wild hire, because this is just kind of a standard conservative, okay, we're bracing for it, we kind of knew it was going to happen type of hiring here.
Yeah, I think he had his eye on Fielding pretty much the whole time. You know, as I reported this week, I mean, he did have a chat with Mark Bergevin, for example. But I don't think he had, I don't think this was about interviewing a bunch of people. I think once he met with Tree Living last week, they spent 2.5 days together here in Toronto. My sense is Shanahan felt pretty good about that candidate from that moment on. But, you know, we'll find out tomorrow when Shanahan meets the media how many people he spoke to if he chooses to address that. But I don't sense it was that deep. I think once he met Brad Tree Living, I think he felt pretty comfortable with him from the get-go.
Pierre, we asked Berkey this about just GM getting on the scene, new on the job. What do you think is most important? Is it kind of, is it a PR move? Not that people aren't stupid. They know people in any kind of business can make a PR move just to gain some popularity. But is it like a player transaction or like to explain your vision where it could be way different? What do you think that's most important for Tree?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Brad is really well-spoken, so I think he'll come in with some keynotes tomorrow and really share generally what his vision is. And listen, you know, I would surmise, without having spoken to him, that, you know, he had to take some time for himself to think about this once he realized this was a possibility. He just spent 9 years in Calgary, in the Canadian market, a very stressful job, and I think you could see the stress of that job near the end in Calgary. And I think the time that he's had away here over the last month has been really beneficial for him, I bet. But my guess is he had to talk to his family and say, okay, are we ready for this? Because this is going to be another, you know, pressure-packed opportunity. Opportunity, yes, but a lot of stress coming his way. To answer your question, the number one priority is not even close to me. I mean, he has to address Matthews ASAP and try and figure out how to sign him. And, you know, one thing about Brad Tree Living, and obviously you can point out that his team's never got out of the second round in Calgary and so on, but boy, he's taken some major swings. And he's not been afraid to shake things up and make aggressive moves. And I will tell you the other thing is, I don't know if there's a GM during his time in Calgary that I heard from other GMs that spent more time on the phone finding out what's out there and what's going on. Super communicative with his fellow GMs, which I think is important, especially in a tight window here with what potentially, you know, is a lot of work here with the Leafs roster.
Pierre, do you think he'll have an opportunity? When you put your stamp on the organization that you're running, but there's things that are already in place, you know, Brian was talking about in the 4 o'clock hour, you know, it'd be really nice. You know, you just mentioned Tree's a really well-spoken guy. Do you think he would be a lot more visible than Kyle was near the end? Do you think he would, you know, maybe lighten the load on the head coach and maybe allow assistant coaches to talk? Like, I don't know if that's an organizational thing or maybe it might be a mandate from the manager down saying, hey, I'd like to be a little bit more accessible here as we go through this journey to try and win.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know that Brad did more media availabilities than Kyle Dubas did when Brad was in Calgary. I'm trying to think. I don't know. He did his normal preseason, midseason, post-trade deadline, et cetera, but no more so. So I don't know why that would change here. I understand your point, Noodles, but, you know, I don't know that his style is to be front and center and to want to be in the spotlight. I don't think that's Tree Living style, but he is very comfortable with it. And I think it's noteworthy, too, for what it's worth. I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to be judged as to whether he can get this team finally over the hump. But I think it's noteworthy to point out that the Leafs are going from a GM in Kyle Dubas that was tremendously liked within the front office and from people that work with him in terms of how he treated people. And they replace him with a guy that, by all accounts, is very similar in his interaction with other people. Brad Gielen, really well-liked. Respectful in the manner in which he treats people and deals with people. And I'm not saying that wouldn't be the case for a lot of different people, but I think we can all agree there are the people that have run teams that are a little more brisk in their nature. And so I don't know if this is just a coincidence in terms of one of the facets of Tree Living's demeanor that Shanahan obviously realized he had on his hands here when he met with him. But he's going from a people person to a people person, which is not automatic in this business.
Well, and that's what I think people will be bracing for, though, within that organization is who does he clear out, which happens almost every time there's turnover, and who does he bring in, right? Like, and how much of that will come from Shanahan, in your opinion, Pierre? Like, you look at a guy like Brandon Pridham, who everyone values clearly, but what if Tree Living doesn't or has someone else he values that can do the same job? Like, how might that play out?
I just don't know that in the here and now, Brian, and it's an excellent question, but they are in such a time crunch between now and the draft in Nashville. Like, you know, tomorrow's June 1st. And I'm not saying there won't be changes, because there always are, but boy, I don't know if he's going to make major artery changes because of the fact that they got to get going there. And he can't be spending his time interviewing for people in the front office when he's got to make major decisions on the roster and needs the people around him to help him do it. And the one thing I would say about Brandon Pridham is that my understanding, and he's given Brendan Shanahan his full, I'm on board, I'm here, and, I want to be loyal to the cause here. And, you know, obviously it would have been hard personally on Brandon Pridham to lose Kyle Dubas. Those two guys were close. But my understanding is Pridham has absolutely let Shanahan know that he's here for the long term here. And I think that would have been probably communicated the Tree Living from Shanahan that Brandon Pridham is going to be a key guy and a guy that he can lean on here.
Pierre, anyone in hockey says the first order of business is Austin Matthews. Do you foresee smooth sailing there, or what is the likelihood of that kind of derailing or anything happening that's not expected?
Well, and Chris talked about this on Inside of Trading last night, O-Dog, that his understanding is, even with Dubas gone, that the Matthews camp has continued to have steady dialogue with Shanahan and the Leafs and Brandon Pridham. And the sense is that, yes, Dubas was a guy that Matthews and his agent were close to, but that doesn't change the fact they want to stay and remain a Maple Leaf. So that's positive from the point of view of the chances of the Leafs re-signing him. This always comes down to the same thing that I've said a few times on the show. I think you guys have talked about it. There's no question to me that he wants to stay. At what number? I mean, you ask me what could throw this off. I mean, there's no question in my mind.
Oh, yeah, there's a number that could throw it off, pal.
Well, there is, and I would tell you that it would shock me if, at least a third of the entirety of the conversations that Tree Living and Shanahan had before his hire would not have been spent on this. What do you think you would do would be the question from Shanahan to Tree Living. I guarantee you. Because, starts and ends right there. You have to get this done. And, not to mention the fact that Brad Tree Living has lived this. And the last thing he wants is to see Austin Matthews walk out the door next year, like he saw Johnny Gaudreau walk out the door. So on a very personal level, Brad Tree Living, I think, learned a lesson there. And I can't imagine he's willing to live that again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would be the first order of business, and I'm sure it'd be very stressful, but I think they will get it done. Any updates on Kyle Dubas' situation?
No, we're still waiting to hear from that situation. I tried a few times last week with him, and it was super polite, and he said, I do not want to comment on what he feels was a personal situation here.
Yeah.
And which tells you, I think, that, whether he's in or out in Pittsburgh, this will have been a difficult process and decision for him. Again, based on the emotion we saw at the end of the season. So we're still waiting to hear where that is.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm curious, if he's, what kind of power he's looking for, what kind of money he's looking for, what Pittsburgh's looking for. Is it Pitt? Is he waiting for another job to open up? I mean, so many different things can be happening behind the scenes. clearly yeah. with Dubas. Right?
Well, because Pittsburgh, the other thing is Pittsburgh wants to hire more than one person, right? They're filling out a front office. So that's the other complication here. The other thing is I think there are a couple of candidates that have been sort of, you know, kept sort of standing, not standing there, but that have not been told they're out and that are waiting to see what happens with Dubas, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
They've interviewed a lot of people there. Listen, and I'm not saying this to alienate myself with Penguins fans because, I mean, they've been the model franchise for so long. But I got to tell you, I don't think this is the greatest job on earth right now. And so I don't know how much that would be weighing on Kyle Dubas or not. But
no kidding.
What job? The Pittsburgh job?
Yeah, the Pittsburgh job. I mean, I think they've got two more years where they can maybe get something done, and Crosby's still one of the best players in the world. But I just think this roster in about 2 years, this could go south in a hurry.
Big
time.
So this comes down to something that you always see with, you know, GMs that are in Kyle Dubas' position over the years is how much confidence do you have in yourself? Like, you know, you always think that these people who run teams have to be so confident that they know they should be patient and wait for something they like. But the reality is over the years sometimes, and that may be what he does, by the way, but I'm just saying in general, it's amazing deep down sort of the paranoia that is often involved with a lot of GMs are like, well, you know, is the phone going to ring again if I wait a year? And again, I'm not saying that'll be the case with Dubas, especially given how young he is. I think he'll be in demand if he sits this one out and is more patient. But 32 jobs, that's it. And, you know, it often comes down to that.
Well, we were talking about Mike Babcock yesterday, who obviously Kyle Dubas had no time for, decided that was enough. Babcock's a free agent now. His contract's up. He's not getting paid anymore. His name came up a few times, you know, a few weeks ago, but it's been awfully quiet. Hirings are starting to happen here. Is he still in the running? Is he still on the radar? What do you foresee happening with Babcock?
Well, as I reported a few weeks ago, Brian, he definitely spoke with the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, I just don't know if that's a fit for him. Like, Mike Babcock, you know, has made a pretty good living. He's made some money, a lot of it from MLSE, more than $50 million. So I do think it's possible he comes back at some point, but it's really going to be something I think that fits his eye. And I think what would fit his eye to me is a team that's just ready to get over the hump, like a team that, in other words, not a retooling or a rebuilding team, I don't think. But so that's why I don't know that, you know, yes, the Jackets spoke to him. Who knows? You never know. I mean, if the Jackets make it enticing enough, and let's face it, they haven't hired anyone yet. I mean, this was supposed to be the week. Jarmo Kekalainen told several media members last week that he thought he'd have a coach in place this week, and it hasn't happened yet. And I wonder if, you know, he missed out on Andrew Burnett with Andrew Burnett going to Nashville. But, you know, you never know. You know, teams have reached out to Babcock, I think, more than has been out there the last couple of years. For example, he was runner-up in Washington when Peter Laviolette got that gig 3 years ago. But it's just that it's not about just – I don't think it's just about coming back for him. I think it's coming back in the right fit. So is that fit there? I don't know.
Pierre, how difficult is it, like, for an organization to pull the trigger on a younger coach like Carberry, like, to take that chance? And there's a bunch of young guys that I think are going to be ready. Mark Savard is one guy who I think is going to be a coach in the NHL and probably maybe ready now if his name's come up. Like, how difficult is it for an organization to say, screw it, we're not going to do the recycle thing, we're going to bring in a young, fresh mind, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, Dreg mentioned him, Mark Savard, last night in IT as a wild card possibility in Calgary. But, you know, Doug, that's always the great question. It's interesting because last summer when a lot of veteran coaches were sort of recycled and popped up and almost like a lot of guys trading jobs, there was criticism out there on social media from some people saying, well, you know, why are these teams taking a chance on younger coaches more often? And then you get to the two conference finals, and it's Peter DeBoer versus Bruce Cassidy and Paul Maurice versus Rob Brind'Amour for the veterans. and you say, oh, yeah, that's why. That's why these guys get hired again. Now, listen, Tampa had to give a young John Cooper a chance. Colorado had to give, especially, Jared Bednar replaced Patrick Roy. I mean, it does happen, obviously, that someone finally gets a chance, and you love to see it. But to answer your question, though, Doug, you know, and I've talked to GMs about this, a lot of the guys get recycled because they trust their track record. They know what they're getting. It may not be perfect.
And they trust the bump.
Yeah. They know what the base is going to be, at least, right? And listen, their jobs are on the line, too. So I don't think it should surprise anyone. Now, at the end of the day, Spencer Carberry, wow, that was interesting. I wrote about this today in my rumblings in The Athletic. I mean, he gets hired by Washington, but in the process, he interviewed in Anaheim, he interviewed with the Rangers, and he interviewed in Nashville before taking the job in Washington and getting a four-year deal. So from Leafs assistant to in demand, and I tell you, my impression is that he really impressed Barry Trotz in the Nashville interview. And I think it absolutely came down, in my opinion, to Andrew Brunette or Spencer Carberry for Nashville. So it tells you what people think of Spencer Carberry.
Talking about veteran guys, any updates on a guy like Stan Bowman or Joel Quenneville, and the league still has to make decisions on that, correct?
Yeah, so my sense, what Gary Bettman, I believe, has communicated to both guys is that once the playoffs are over, so we still have another round to go here, that at some point Bettman would sit down with them and talk to them, and then we'll see where the process goes from there. It didn't prevent Sam Bowman from interviewing. He interviewed in Calgary. He went, you know, I think far enough in that process before Corey Conway got that job. But at the end of the day, they would both still need the clearance. And I don't know how much that affected the Rangers coaching search or not, because it certainly felt early on like Quenneville would be the front runner there in New York, and then he wasn't. And then you wonder if the Rangers checked in with the league and asked about what was going on there. So, you know, that'll be interesting. But by the mere fact that that Gary Bettman, I think, is waiting for post-playoffs, and again, post-playoffs could be who knows when exactly, right? Doesn't mean it's the next day. Certainly in the case of Quenneville, it feels like maybe he'll miss this cycle, but whatever the case, I wouldn't surprise me if we saw maybe Stan Bowman come back in like a supporting role somewhere in a front office, you know, before the end of the summer.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I mean, it's such uncharted territory, really, for the NHL, you know, in terms of like what a playbook would be here from Bettman's perspective. And, you know, I think most people, not all people, would agree at some point, you know, they've paid a price deservedly and they should be allowed to resume their careers. But when is that timeline? You know, I don't have that answer. And it doesn't sound like Bettman necessarily does right now either.
Right. That remains to be seen. And I know in Stan Bowman's case, Dregs reported this a few months ago, and I've talked to other people about it myself, but it's not something that Stan Bowman has wanted to really talk about because he's not looking for attention to it. But he's been spending this whole past year doing work with Sheldon Kennedy, actually, and some of the work that Sheldon Kennedy does with all kinds of different teams across the continent. So it'll be interesting, actually, to find out what exactly that entails and what that has meant to, you know, to Bowman's growth and thought process and so on, and how much of that, whether or not it impacts what the commissioner decides at the end of the day.
All right, buddy. We'll leave it there. Thank you for doing this. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, I'm off to Vegas in the morning. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yes, enjoy yourself. We'll call you bright and early.
Game's not so Saturday, pal.
Yeah, media day Friday morning, though, buddy. Got to go to media day.
Yes, you got to put in time. Right. I'm sure if the Blue Jackets were in the Cup Final, you'd be down there early. Positive. Enjoy yourself, Pierre. Thank you, buddy.
See you, buddy.
Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider.
Yeah. All right. If it's in a crappy town, I will be missing the media day availability.
We can zoom
year.
Into that, right? You can zoom in. You can get on a conference call. Conference calls in brutal cities.
Exactly.
Vegas, yeah, we'll fly in whenever you need. Who do you need? We'll be there. We'll make that work.
Yeah.
So, all good. Cup Final starting on Saturday night. Jays back in action tonight. Steve Phillips will join us. Oakland got a win last night. Then they got dummied today. Well, they lost again today,
Oakland.
But they won.
Yeah.
Oakland got themselves a win against Atlanta, of all teams. And Jays Brewers tonight. Steve will join us. What do we expect out of Manoah tonight? We'll get his answer on that. We'll do that next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. Overdrive brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. Steve Phillips will join us here in a few moments, get his take on Vladdy and, you know, his home run prowess. Where is it at? What's he up to? Still has not hit a home run at the Rogers Center, which is a wild,
that is insane.
Just a fluky, weird stat. You know, like, it's just, it doesn't really make any sense. But we'll see. Maybe he breaks out tonight, paying plus 300, I believe.
Weird, hinging on concerning.
Strange, yes, possibly concerning. Again, you know, Vladdy's had a good year. He's had a good year, but you expect greatness out of him. He's capable of greatness. And when you see the other, you know, high-end talents around the American League, like Judge is doing it again, just hitting home run after home run after home run.
His stat line is exactly the same as last year.
It's crazy. Wild, man.
Yeah.
It is wild. Like, he's not hitting 62. I cannot picture back-to-back 60-plus, but I'm starting to lean towards 50-plus.
I know, but what I always go back to is, why is he not getting the Barry Bonds treatment? What are these guys thinking?
It's a very good question.
Is there some kind of recipe that they think they can get some smoke up high? But I don't know what it is, but, I mean, Barry Bonds was walked all the time.
Yeah. Big time.
Intentionally walked. He intentionally walked with the bases loaded.
Yes.
Like, forget it. We're not giving up four. We'll give you one. I mean, Bonds was such a machine. So crazy. Like, yeah. Judge is not at that level, but he's not, like, for modern-day performances, that's what he represents. He just rolled through Toronto. How many homers? What did he hit, four home runs?
Four, yep.
Yeah,
that series.
Just dummied the Jays. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst. Where do you stand on that, Steve? Like, how far off are we from seeing teams just say, we can't do it, man? We can't pitch to this guy in New York.
Oh, I'm all about that. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, the Yankee lineup yesterday was really pathetic. I mean, they had Judge was batting second. Willie Calhoun was batting third. And why Aaron Judge would ever get a pitch to hit, I do not understand. He homered again yesterday. And, you know, LeMahieu batted fourth, who's a contact hitting guy, not a power guy. And then Isaiah Conner-Falefa, Jake Bowers. Like, I'm looking at the lineup thinking, this is what the Yankees are running out there, and they scored 9 runs. And Judge certainly a part of that. But I'm with you on it. I would not pitch to Aaron Judge at all. I would make everybody else try to beat me. You know, they don't have Anthony Rizzo in the lineup right now. They don't have Donaldson in the lineup. They don't have Stanton in the lineup, especially without those guys. And, you know, the key is don't have traffic on the bases in front of them just so that you can walk him. And, you know, what happens is when guys get on base in front of them, then you're kind of forced to pitch to them. But I'm with you. I would force somebody else to beat me. And, you know, it was Buck Showalter back in the day that with the bases loaded walked Barry Bonds to walk in a run just to avoid having to pitch to him.
Steve, if I had told you in February that on May 31st, Vladdy wouldn't have a homer at the Dome, what would you have said? And we all know the answer, so how concerning is it, and what do you make of it?
I would have called you crazy, and I would have been right. But still, it would have been an issue for sure that he hadn't hit a home run. I mean, he can be streaky, and I think what it means is, because I do believe in the back of the baseball card, it means he's got a lot of home runs coming, and they're going to happen, and they're going to happen in a flurry, and they're going to happen in a bunch, and they're going to get going. And you know, I think that he is having some better at bats recently, so. You know, we know the launch angle has been an issue in the past with him. I think we're beyond that right now, where he can still have a lower launch angle, find his pitches to drive, and pick a pitch during an at-bat and be able to do that. But this whole team has just been hit and miss, where it's been good at times, bad at times. The timing hasn't been great, whether it's been better on the road or worse at home. It's just, you know, there's something missing with where they're going, and they haven't gotten into the rhythm. They can, and I think they will. But, you know, they don't want to let too much distance get between them and the top of the division either.
Steve, I feel like we're asking you weekly the thought process on Alek Manoah. Now, tonight's going to be, I believe, his 12th start. Where are you at as far as confidence that he can get it on the rails consistently? Because we were talking about it earlier, and it's not a lot of belief. You're almost expecting, like, hey, this guy may make it through 4 or 5 innings, and you hope that he doesn't cap out at that point and get rocked.
Yeah, so I don't have a lot of confidence in it. And I would have, after the last start, sent him down to the minor leagues. Now, that being said, having talked to people within the organization, they are confident. They thought he had a great bullpen session. They feel like that he's locked in, that he's going to get things turned around. And I said, all right, so what does that mean? And they said he's going to attack the zone. Well, he hasn't done that yet. His walk rate has gone up significantly. He's not getting swings and misses. And I know the key in watching the game tonight is that he's got to keep his front shoulder closed, because when he doesn't, his arm looks slow, his arm drags behind his body, and his slider flattens out, and he leaves his fastball. You see him missing with his fastball up and into right-handed hitters, and he's falling back into the bad habits of the problems with his mechanics. If he's able to throw the fastball down and away, then he's getting locked back into where he was. Now, that being said, one start does not mean that you're fixed. It's too small a sample size, and he's going to need to be able to take that motor memory, lock in what he did, and carry it forward. So I'm dubious. I'm not sure I'm buying it. I just don't know how you fix yourself mechanically while competing in a game when you're this far out of sync with things. And so, they're pretty confident in the organization that he's going to be better tonight. Even if he is, I'm still going to be holding my breath the next time he makes a start, and probably the next time after that, before I see multiple starts of him looking like the old Alek Manoah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's got to get through basically June here. You wake up in July and you feel like he's got a mojo, then you can start to buy into it again. But we'll see what he's got tonight. Last night, Kikuchi pitched well again. The bats came alive. And Nate Pearson came out, and it certainly was not a high-leverage situation for him, but he performed very well, and he's performed really well since he's been up. He's got 16 innings pitched. He's got a 1.65 ERA. He's striking out a lot of guys. I think he's only given up one home run, not walking anyone, which is a rarity on this staff, the amount of walks that are being handed out every single night. He looks really good, looks really solid. You mentioned sample size, though, Steve. I don't think anyone could suggest 16 innings is enough to project what he's going to do for the rest of his career. But what do you make of Pearson and the possibility that he becomes a guy that Schneider and company can really rely on?
Yeah, I think it gives you some hope, right? I mean, it's been a while since, we've had the hope of him fulfilling the potential. And I think, and I'm with them. I would give up the thought of him as a starter. I think that let him come out there and let it eat. Let that fastball go. Throw your breaking ball, attack hitters, be aggressive, and that would be a weapon that they could really use right now in the bullpen. It would give Swanson a bit of a break. It could give Romano a bit of a break on a given day, and so it gives me hope. Now, one of the things John Gibbons was always really good at was he was good at building his bullpen during the course of the year. That you start out the year thinking, I don't know if they have all the pieces that they need, but he would figure out what role and what situation against which hitters in the opposition guys would work and fit, and all of a sudden they would have this rhythm of a relief core. To me, the bullpen is a living, breathing organism. The head is the closer. When the closer's right, everybody else can be right because you can pitch in roles and situations. And so I think if Swanson and Romano keep pitching successfully, I do think that Pearson can really, develop into a real weapon for them, to where at the end of the year, he's a high-leverage go-to guy, and maybe even surpass Swanson in that role at some point and be that fixture in that bullpen for the next several years.
Steve, I don't know why this happened, but mention of the Oakland A's has popped up on this show. Is that... It's some goofy stuff, man. And like in all your years of baseball, is that the worst outfit you've ever seen? I mean, is Vegas getting close to saying, maybe just stay there?
Yeah, maybe. By the time they move to Vegas, it'll be several years while they're hoping for 2027. So they need to get the stadium built. They're going to take some time to be able to get that all in motion. And I would hope by then that we will see a more competitive team. The problem is they're not going to have any money to spend because nobody's spending any money to watch this team. I mean,
hang on a second. I thought they were going there next year.
Well, if they do, it's to play in a minor league stadium. There's a minor league team there. Their lease expires after 2024. I don't know whether the city of Oakland is going to play ball with them to try to keep them there until the stadium is built. So the thought was You can move your major league team to play in the minor league stadium there. You're going to have to upgrade the lights and the field and do all of that, kind of like what the Blue Jays did in Buffalo. But, you know, you're still talking about a minor league stadium, and you're not going to draw the kind of revenues that you're going to get from a major league stadium. Now, the other thing I don't understand is why would they build a 37 or 35,000-seat stadium? Like, I understand that the smaller stadiums build a sense of urgency to make sure you can get a ticket and everything else, but why don't you build a 40,000-seat stadium and you know, market the team and at least give yourself the potential to get more fans? Like, I'd rather, you know, have 38,000 there than 34,500 in a 35,000-seat stadium. I don't know. But they're not going to have money to spend for a few years, especially because even in a minor league stadium, they're not going to draw the kind of money that they would need to start to build this team and build the roster out.
Yeah, it is a tough – you're right. It's a tough call in terms of, like, you know, you look at the Rogers Center. The counter is you get the dome that's got way too many seats, and they're adjusting that. That's what they're doing. Like, they're taking seats out, which is also an option in the future. You know, if it is too many, you can adjust it. You can build more luxury suites or patios or whatever. But Vegas, like, you would think, like, a state-of-the-art stadium, they're looking to have concerts there. But they already get the football stadium there that's state-of-the-art. Like, everything in Vegas is state-of-the-art. The hockey team's state-of-the-art. Right. The football team's state-of-the-art. Like, it's just a different level of competition in Vegas.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And look, I mean, concerts at a baseball stadium versus the football stadium versus one of the, you know, casinos and the resorts and the hotels there with all of the, you know, theaters that they have in those places, you know, I don't know whether they, you know, what's the best venue for that. And they're all going to, you know, there's a lot of competition going on for that, you know, that luxury dollar and that leisure dollar and such. And so, you know, you wonder how much stuff outside of baseball they're going to be able to get to go in there when you've got all of those other facilities willing to bring those people in too. So it'll be interesting to see. But it's got to be better than Oakland right now. That part's easy to make that decision. I mean, Oakland is just, it is from the facility to, you know, the limited. And look, it's a passionate fan base, but, you know, 3,500 people who really love a team is not enough to sustain a team.
No, yeah. It's sickening the way that they're going out too, right? Like, it's, in a way, somewhat
sickening is like an understatement.
It is an understatement. Like, because there are diehards that have been there for a long time and committed and have been season ticket holders. And, like, they're not even trying. Like, this team they put together is, that's the most pathetic team.
It's not good.
It really is.
Like, There's rats in the press box. It's
awful. It's pathetic.
And they just beat the Atlanta Braves the last two games.
Right, last night. They won, although then they lost this afternoon, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's gross. Yet, you know, revenue sharing and, like, they're still going to make some money, aren't they? Like, the owner may lose a little bit, but he's not going broke the way the owners
are. Oh, no, he's going to make money. He's not going to – no, they won't lose money. They're going to make money this year.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they'll make money. Yeah, lowest payroll, and they'll get more money in revenue sharing than they'll be paying in their payroll. So they're making money this year for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, Steve, I had one last question for you about going back to the Blue Jays. What does a Bichette contract look like when you start looking at it? And is Vladdy leaving some money on the table based on kind of playing well, but maybe where he was that first year with 48 dingers? So, you know, where do you think his contract, is he hemorrhaging? Hemorrhaging might be the wrong word, but is he leaving some money on the table? And what do you think that would look like?
You know, you could take a snapshot at any time and think, okay, now's the time to go sign this guy because you're going to get a discount. And then you wait 2 weeks, and the next thing you know, Vladdy's homered in 6 of 7 games, and the numbers are where they are, and you're thinking, ah, geez, we should have gotten the deal done then. Bichette's contract's going to start with a 3, and Vladdy's contract's going to start with a 3 and maybe get to a 4. And, I mean, just look, we saw what the free agent market did for shortstops this past year, and Bogarts and Turner and all those guys. And Bichette, you know, will likely end up for the 3rd straight year leading Major League Baseball in hits. And, you know, that does not happen often. And so we're talking about an elite-level offensive performer who's, you know, even if at some point you're going to move to second base, you saw what Semien got, and that's going to be several years removed. So, yeah, I think you're looking at a monster contract for both of these guys And the longer it goes on, the higher the price is going to go.
Well, it continues to roll on tonight with Milwaukee in town and Alek Manoah on the mound. We'll see what he's got. I know the baseball world's bracing for it. Enjoy it tonight, Steve. We'll do it again later in the week. Thank you for this.
Okay, you bet, guys. My pleasure.
Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst. Jays Brewers tonight. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Look ahead to the games again tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, today's best bets powered by FanDuel. Make your picks and assemble a same-game parlay in seconds on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I'm going big game hunting tonight with an SGP. I'm going to go with Vladdy hitting a home run.
All right, let's
do it. We've been talking about it, plus 300. It's going to happen.
Double down and say Manoah. I don't know what the Manoah prop is or whatever. Do it.
I can't go there with Manoah. I just
really?
I can't commit to it right now. Like him hitting a strikeout prop, you know. Or,
yeah, what would a number on him be? Like what would be something that would be out there?
Probably, I think it's 5.5 is his total for strikeouts. Like I'd probably bet the under. I haven't seen his walk total.
Is there a bet how long he lasts in the game, how deep he goes into a game?
I haven't seen that, but I'm sure you can find it. If it's out there, it's on FanDuel. That
is for sure. Give me five innings.
You think 5+ tonight? That's the. Yeah. Let's say that's the number. Over under 5 innings.
I'm over.
I'm under. I'm sorry. I
know. It's disgusting.
I told you about
that,
the car on two wheels going around the bend. You're just like, what the hell is up
there?
Yeah,
you're peeking around and you're hoping. You're hoping. And that's
no,
kind of what I'm at.
Praying.
I could see 4 1/3 tonight, 4 2/3 pushing up against it. But
wow.
I'd lean under. It'll be close to that, right? Maybe 5 on the number. It could be. But Alejandro Kirk's starting to swing a bat here. I'll take him to record 2+ total bases tonight. I wouldn't be shocked if he went deep tonight. The captain is back, right? Alejandro. Everyone's jacked about Alejandro Kirk. Getting a lot of play with Danny Jansen on the IL. So those are your two best bets. You parlay that. It's paying plus 750 tonight. Ooh. Today's best bet's powered by FanDuel. The first inning means as much as the ninth when you bet baseball on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Please play responsibly. Must be 19+. And physically located in Ontario. All right, so we got the Jays in action, bunch of ball games. NBA back on Friday. Cup final on Saturday.
It's coming. Starting to come to a head here.
Yeah,
are you going to be able to golf tomorrow or not?
I don't know what my – I honestly don't know what my plan is at this point. I'm afraid to get back out.
Well, you got to get back out. You can't be rusty for next week.
I know. Next week, I might just be winging it next week because we're doing shows from, you know, the course, so I'm not going to be doing really anything next week. We got to get there. I want to see the action, you know, be a part of – be on the grounds. So, I don't know. I'll get some swings in between now and the pro.
You got to cleanse yourself. I felt cleansed.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
What I mean, did you say, holy water today?
Yeah.
You said you felt like you'd been dipped in holy water.
Yeah. On the second hole at Weston, Danny DePasquale dipped me in the water and said, you're cleansed.
You're cleansed. Yeah, it's behind you. And that's what's necessary, I think, for me too. So I'll let you know. We'll see how it plays out. But, Brad Treliving, his press will be live on TSN Radio tomorrow. Tomorrow at 11 a.m., he'll be up there on the podium, and hopefully we can get Treliving on. We'll see what happens tomorrow night.
If not, full replay of the interview. We'll let the people hear it.
Yeah, we'll see what he's got. We'll see what he's got in store in terms of the podium
tomorrow.
Hopefully, let it breathe tomorrow, right? Like, let him answer every question. It just, you know, don't just get him in, get him out. Like, there's a lot to talk about. Right, there's a lot of people are curious. What's going on? Where people know who he is, but you know, what have you been doing there? What are you going to apply here?
Yeah, like more of a relaxed type feel instead of the Sheldon Keefe like three questions and smell you later.
Right, and it's not going to be a carved job. But, it never is when someone's hired.
But
like,
he's
not
going to be able
operate.
To. The thing is he's probably not going to be able to answer some of the questions that everyone wants to know. What are you doing with your coach? Well, I haven't met him yet. You know what I mean? Like, going to meet him later or talk to him this weekend. Like, you know, he'd probably be candid about that. But it's just, you know, what's your thought process? Well, obviously, I want to go meet with Austin Matthews, get that sorted out. We got some work to do here. I don't know if any of the questions we've been talking about we will get. And even if Brad wants to be candid, I don't even know if he knows the answers yet because he's just starting a job, right?
Sure. Yeah, and that's again, that's totally reasonable.
Right.
And if you're expecting all these, he can't give you an answer on everything because he just got here.
Right.
Clearly. But, you know, a lot of people, it's a big job. You know, it's one of the biggest jobs in the city. He's the new GM of Leafs. So we'll see what he's got in store tomorrow at 11 a.m. All right. Thank you to everyone behind the scenes. We appreciate it. Everyone helping out. Everyone for tuning in today. Radio, TV, podcast, web. Of course, we love all of that as well. We appreciate all the support. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
Introducing TSN Plus.
What a game changer.
Canada's new home for PGA Tour Live.
Are you kidding me?
Exclusive data-enhanced feeds, plus more goals, dunks, aces, and speed. Visit tsn.ca/TSN Plus to learn more.